Hello again, you're listening to the news at 1. 838 patients were on hospital trolleys this morning awaiting admission to a bed, according to the latest figures from the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation. Limerick University Hospital was again the worst affected, with 76 patients waiting. Sligo had 65, Cork 62, Galway 51. Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly has this morning been updating the Cabinet on the situation. He's already warned that the trolley numbers could get worse before they begin to ease. Separately, the Chief Medical Officer has urged parents not to send children back to school or childcare this week if they're displaying symptoms of illness. The reopening of schools, she warns, creates an environment for increased respiratory virus transmission. Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly joins us from our Dáil studio this lunchtime. A very good afternoon to you, Minister, and welcome to the News at One.
Good afternoon, Brian.
Now, we've seen this decline today in the numbers on hospital trolleys, down from a record number yesterday, but still the second highest on record. Are you still of the view that there could be worse to come?
Certainly, that's the view of the HSE when I met them yesterday, when I met the senior team. And based on my discussions with the Chief Medical Officer and what might still be coming in terms of the flu wave, which is causing huge pressure in our emergency departments. Yes, unfortunately, that is entirely possible. We saw a very important reduction over the last 24 hours. We'd seen a big number build up over the weekend and then over the bank holiday. I want to acknowledge the work of our healthcare workers right across the country, who did a huge amount of work yesterday, but obviously much wider than yesterday, are working under sustained and intense pressure. I also, Brian, can I just acknowledge the very significant difficulties for patients and families. I was in the emergency departments yesterday. I was talking to patients. I was talking to healthcare workers. And the current situation is one which, whilst it's being experienced right across Europe, Northern Ireland, Britain, is one which we must continue to build capacity and reform so that our healthcare system can deal with these winter pressures.
What those patients, their families, and indeed the frontline staff want to hear from you is your plans, your immediate plans, to try to deal with this very immediate crisis. Now, it wasn't unanticipated. You were talking about measures being put in place before Christmas. You cleared more overtime payments, the recruitment of agency staff, having consultants on duty at weekends and in the evenings, getting beds from private hospitals. Has that plan simply failed?
Well, this is something that we've been working on, not just through this year. So as you referenced, we had a winter plan this year. That plan is being implemented. It's a very comprehensive plan. But we've been working on this now for several years, because we know that patients on trolleys is something that we have seen for many, many years. And we know from our healthcare workers why that is. They have said to us, we need more beds. We need more healthcare professionals. We need more diagnostics. We need more community-based resources. And over the last 3 years, we've put in place record levels of beds in hospitals, in the community, diagnostics. We've added over 16,000 extra healthcare professionals, and we're going to continue to do that.
We have record numbers, Minister, on trolleys.
We do, Brian, and this is something we were warning about for several months. We watched what happened in the Southern Hemisphere. It's being experienced here. It's being experienced right across Europe. So the best resourced healthcare systems in Europe, the best run healthcare systems in Europe, are experiencing very similar strains and stresses in emergency departments that we are. And it's because of this perfect storm. We have a combination of a very significant burden of COVID, a flu wave that has hit heavier and harder than normal.
I think at this stage the context of this is pretty well understood. But let's take a couple of aspects of this, of your own plan. Private beds, sourcing beds in private hospitals. How many, do you know how many private beds have been secured since you announced your initiative just before Christmas?
I do. So the HSC has advised that they have secured 185 beds, and the majority of those are being used. Now, I met with the HSC team yesterday and made it very clear that we need to go further than that. We need to be more ambitious, and that the funding required is available to use.
What the private hospitals are saying is that they need an overarching agreement here, not some ad hoc arrangement on a hospital by hospital basis, something along the lines of the deal that was put in place to deal with COVID. Will you sit down with them and try and agree something along those lines?
The HSC is already doing that, but in fairness to the HSC, what they're also trying to do is learn from what happened previously. Your listeners will remember that there was a blanket policy put in place during COVID, where essentially all of the private capacity was available. But what happened was, in many cases, less than 40% of that capacity actually got used. So what the HSE is trying to do is work with the private providers to say, we want to use your capacity. My message and government's message very clearly is all available private capacity should be used. And what the HSE is trying to do now is use that without leaving a lot of beds empty, which is something that happened during the first wave of COVID.
You said last evening that you'd like to see senior decision makers in hospitals, consultants in effect. You're very keen to see them on site, particularly when patients need them, be it late at night or at weekends. Now, we can understand why you're very keen, but what have you done or are you doing to make that happen?
We're doing several things. So first of all, what needs to happen is we have to hire more people. So earlier on this year, I sanctioned a big increase in the number of emergency medicine consultants, emergency medicine nurses and healthcare assistants. So that's one thing we have to do. But while we're building that up, because that takes time, there is an ask of consultants and of the appropriate medical staff now to come in just for the next few weeks, to come in at the weekends. It's something I discussed with the HSE yesterday when I met them, and so it's a call that the HSE will be putting out today.
Sorry, you're asking them, but they're under no obligation to do that, are they?
They're not. The current consultant contract does not facilitate that. It's something we are relying on their goodwill. And in fairness, the consultants and the other healthcare professionals over the last 3 years have stepped up time and time again. And that ask is being put out by the HSE. It is one of the main changes, Brian, for the new consultant contract. Your listeners will be aware that one of the fundamental changes is it now brings in Saturdays. And rather than a typical working day of, say, 9 to 6, it brings in 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. the consultants can be rostered.
Yeah, we spoke to you about that before Christmas when you got Cabinet approval for that deal. But at this stage, have contracts actually been put in front of consultants?
Well, the contracts have been put in front of consultants for consideration. As I said when you and I spoke on this, when government agreed it, we have to respect, we want to respect the IMO and the IHCA processes. So they've now been discussing that for a few weeks.
So nobody signed up yet?
The contract hasn't been offered because we want to respect the IHCA and the IMO processes. But what I hope does happen is that they endorse the contract, they recommend the contract, because what I want to see and what government wants to see is an increase in the consultant numbers. Right. Currently, we have about 3,800. I think we need to get closer to 6,000. And this contract is essential to achieving that.
All right. In relation to what perhaps is the issue at the very heart of this and been talked about for very many years now, our lack of adequate numbers of acute hospital beds. I think you'd accept that we've fewer than the OECD average. Your department's own figures shows that there were, an extra 1,000 beds added in the decade between 2011 and 2021. Do you acknowledge that we need thousands more hospital beds if we're ever really to see progress on this ED overcrowding crisis?
I do. The 2018 capacity review, which came out of Sláinte Care, that estimated that we needed about an extra 2,500, 2,400 extra hospital beds. We've now put 1,000 of those in. Over the last 3 years, we're moving on with that. I think it's entirely likely that we need to go further than the 2,400.
So, I mean, at the moment, we are really just running to stand still. We're really just matching the increase in population, which we've seen over the last decade or more.
No. Over the last 3 years, we're moving significantly faster than that. So we've added about 1,000 hospital beds, hundreds of community beds. The workforce has increased by 16,000. Like, that's 4,500 extra nurses and midwives. But critically as well, Brian, investing in hospitals is not enough. The other thing that we're doing and we have to continue to do is invest in community, because a lot of the solutions to emergency medicine pressures are found outside of the hospitals. Primary care centres, general practice, specialist teams within the community. And that really is the big long-term reform.
When's the last time you tried to get an appointment with a GP?
There are definitely issues for patients getting access to GPs. The GPs are under pressure. But I would say again, Brian, when we're having this conversation, and I fully acknowledge and government fully acknowledges there's a lot more capacity to add, we do need to remember the context, obviously, of what's happening with RSV, COVID and the flu.
Do you accept that lives are being put at risk as a result of all this? That patients, as some clinicians believe to be the case, will die as a result of this overcrowding crisis?
The literature is very clear that overcrowding increases patient safety risks. I don't think there's any question about that. And therefore, when we have this kind of overcrowding, the literature is pretty clear that patient safety risks do go up. It's one of many reasons why we need to continue with the investment in the hospitals and in the community.
And what about the suggestion from the nurses organisation, and I think the patients association as well, just this lunchtime, that the government should reintroduce the mask wearing mandate, that the INMO believes could have an impact within weeks?
Yeah, I spoke with the INMO about this yesterday, and can I acknowledge that they've been very proactive and very constructive in trying to find solutions to the current situation. I discussed it with the Chief Medical Officer yesterday following the conversation with the INMO, and Professor Smith's view is at the moment she would not be minded to recommend mandated masks. However, what the CMO has said, and what I certainly will reiterate, is there's already important advice around mask wearing in place. Public transport, indoor crowded settings, and healthcare. And I would certainly encourage all of your listeners to follow that advice.
Will all of this, will the overcrowding in our ED departments and the measures that have been taken to deal with it mean further delays in elective procedures in the course of this year? Limerick, we know, has already cancelled all non-emergency surgery. Is it going to mean even longer waiting times for patients now in 2023?
It certainly has a knock-on, yes. When you cancel elective procedures, inpatient day case procedures, inevitably there are patients that have to then be rescheduled and have to be seen again. And we have this ongoing trade-off between managing the pressures for patients in our emergency departments and managing, obviously, the pressures in the waiting lists.
And in relation to those waiting lists, last February you announced a €350 million initiative to try to bring down the waiting list. But according to documents released to the Irish Times, your own departmental general secretary, Robert Watt, says that there's been no prospective improvement in numbers waiting, and that, I quote, significant money has been allocated, which didn't seem to be yielding additional activity. Where did the money go?
That's right. And I think that's an email that Robert Watt sent around August, September time. And what we saw was the waiting list plan was broadly on track in terms of the numbers. What I observed from July, August onwards was a gap widening between what the plan was meant to be delivering and what it was delivering. So I intervened, the Secretary General intervened. We had very intensive interactions with the HSE. Changes were made by the HSE in how they were running that programme. And we've seen some much more positive results.
What have been the results?
Well, as you and I discussed before, the focus has been on long waiters, people waiting more than 18 months, waiting more than 12 months, waiting more than 6 months. And in all of those categories, we're seeing very significant reductions. So we're seeing 25, 35, 40% reductions across those categories. And that's something we're going to continue to focus on and accelerate this year.
Just a final question, Minister. EU officials are meeting today in Brussels to try to agree a coordinated response to this surge of COVID infections in China. Now, you'll be aware that a number of European countries have already introduced mandatory testing of people coming from China, passengers from Chinese destinations. And that, we're told by the European Commission, is the overwhelming view of the majority of member states. What's your and the government's view on that?
That's right. I'm waiting on a recommendation. I'm expecting a recommendation later on this evening or tomorrow from the Chief Medical Officer. Essentially, six measures have been put together by the EU and they're being broadly supported. This meeting is happening today and I don't want to preempt it, but my expectation is that all six measures are going to be recommended. There's a variety of measures. One of them, for example, is around wastewater treatment testing close to transport hubs and close to airports. But the one that's gaining most attention is around a requirement for pre-flight tests for passengers arriving in from China. We're not bound by that. I'm going to wait to see what the recommendation is from the Chief Medical Officer, but certainly if the recommendation is that we would go with that, that's something I will bring to party leaders and to Cabinet for discussion.
Very good. Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, thank you very much for talking to us on the programme.